From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking about e-commerce in craft with Luke Holder. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Craft CMS, a content management system that doesn't suck. Whether you're a content strategist, developer, or content author, Craft has your back with some amazing features, like its powerful matrix field, which makes modular content a breeze, or live preview, which shows you exactly how your entry will look on the front end while you're editing it. Craft is free for personal use and only $199 for most client sites. To learn more about it or to get your own personalized demo site, head over to buildwithcraft.com.
Our topic today is e-commerce in craft, and our guest is Luke Holder, who recently joined Pixel and Tonic to lead their first-party commerce plugin for craft. Welcome to the show, Luke.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, Luke, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Yeah, sure. As you can probably tell by my accent, I'm from far away from you guys. I'm in Perth, Western Australia. I was born here, and I'm working for Pixel and Tonic, and we're in different time zones, but we make it work.
How does that work? Do you guys have a coordinated period of hours where everyone's available, or do you just use messaging and follow up that way when people are available in their own time zones?
So, yeah, we do a number of things. We use Slack, so we're always in communication on Slack, and then we have a couple of calls each week, and that's usually like my nighttime. I'm a bit of a night owl. So I'm happy to be up at 11 p.m. and that's usually Brandon's up in the morning quite early. And then the other person we actually get is Benjamin David, who's over in France. And so the three of us have a call twice a week, actually. So, yeah, it works out with Slack and with, you know, being able to see the history of the communication while I'm sleeping when I wake up in the morning. It works itself out. So, yeah, we're doing all right. It's fairly new for Pixel and Tonic because they've been US based for a long time, but with Ben coming on board and then me, there's been some adjustments, but it's working out well.
It's kind of amazing, you know, what technology allows us to do these days with distributed teams. I mean, Leigh and I, it's seamless. I mean, I very rarely encounter an issue where I'm like, oh, I wish we were in if we were in the same room, we could get this done. We can always get everything done.
Yeah, I think the one missing part, I think, would be something like a whiteboard. It's just not comfortable, not comfortable to draw like on a screen with a mouse. Even if you're just circling things, it's kind of uncomfortable. So that's the one thing I can't wait for some kind of, you know, virtual reality. I think there's a lot of stuff that's coming in that direction. But yeah, it's still very good. Much better than it was years ago.
So before we get in and talk about the new commerce plugin, and when I'm saying commerce, listeners, it's with a capital C, that's the name of the plugin for craft. I wanted to talk about e-commerce in general because you have a history working with e-commerce before even, you know, joining Pixel and Tonic. So when did you start working on e-commerce projects and what kind of clients projects did you work with?
Yeah, so I've been doing websites since about 2000 when I graduated high school. And through that time, I haven't just been purely, you know, building commerce websites. I've built, you know, regular content managed websites on various platforms, but throughout that time, I've probably just worked on lots of different e-commerce projects, and that means, you know, anything from simple PayPal integrations for simple payments to membership systems, so, you know, subscription membership systems, and then also, you know, regular physical like product type e-commerce, and those for a few years there were on Expression Engine, so I'm familiar with the Expression Engine content management system. And so I was using things like Expresso Store and, yeah, things like that. So, I mean, I wouldn't say that for the last 10 years, I haven't been a commerce, you know, specialist, but I have done a lot of commerce projects. And so I always knew kind of what I wanted to see out of a commerce plugin or a commerce, you know, platform. So, yeah. And so, I've also done commerce projects where it's not so much a platform where it's using like a SaaS-based product. So like a JavaScript, embedded JavaScript cart. There's a couple that have become a bit more popular lately, like Snipcart. But right. one that I've used on other projects previously is there's one called Equid, which is not a very well-known one, but it's a JavaScript-based cart that you can just embed in any type of content management system. So I've done a lot of projects, but I'd never done from top to bottom, complete from scratch commerce system.
I think it's, based on my own experience, every e-commerce project I do builds my understanding of e-commerce, not only the options that are out there of different services or different platforms, but also just kind of the things that I need to talk to my client about at the very beginning of a project to make sure that I can choose the right sort of service. And so I'm curious, regardless of the complexity of a commerce project or a project that had some type of e-commerce in it, what were the kind of things that you always had to account for and or build?
Yeah, that's a good question, because commerce projects, e-commerce is so varied. I mean, saying, subscriptions, simple donations, custom kind of checkout workflows with, many types of options. I'm thinking about that, the first kind of question that usually clients need to know is what it's going to cost, right? What is the cost of doing business online? And that usually leads to what percentage of, what do I have to account for percentage-wise that the gateways are going to take?
Right.
And so actually choosing a gateway is actually very early on in the process. And it's a very common thing that you need to get figured out early, because if you're going to choose a SaaS e-commerce platform, sometimes they're limited on the gateways that they offer, or maybe the client really only wants to deal with their certain merchant account that's related to their bank. And so that means that it kind of rules out a bunch of different commerce platforms, because they only work with, PayPal, for example. So I think gateways is something that you need to figure out very early on, how they're going to manage their money, how they're going to receive their money. Mm-hmm. And then it's so varied. You have to go into the requirements for the actual, project itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're working on a commerce project right now, and this was the first time that I had a really detailed questionnaire for the client, everything from things like the gateway. At the very beginning, we weren't even going to talk about what kind of solution we were going to build. I wanted to get the full scope of what, she was interested in doing. And frankly, it's an exhaustive questionnaire. It's very long and it can be intimidating to a client, but I kept stressing to her the importance of, I need to know how granular, for example, are your shipping needs? What do you need to do with your shipping? Because that's going to determine, what kind of features we need to have. Same with taxes. And so for me, I found that putting that questionnaire together was really helpful, because then I really could not only identify the service, but then once I had the service, I already had the answers to the questions on how to configure what we were going to build.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry.
No, I was about to say that I feel like the other question to answer, really, really early on, which I think builds on top of what gateway are they going to be using in the first place, is what are their short-term and long-term needs? Right? Because sometimes clients come to us with, they don't already have an established store, or they're just a new small business and they have this idea and they want to sell this XYZ, right? But you don't know whether or not that's going to expand to different types of products later on. Because, we've got clients who want to have a subscription-based website, but they might have downloads, And then on occasion, they might have a physical book to ship later on. And that's due to the type of business they're in and how much their business is going to expand, or how much they believe their business is going to expand, because sometimes they don't even know what type of products they're going to sell until they become successful and somebody asks for that product.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I had a client like that. She sold recipe books, physical recipe books that she wrote. And she got to the stage where she was selling a lot of recipe books, and she wanted to get into some different markets, and she wanted to do ebooks.
Yes.
And her e-commerce system didn't support downloads. It was just kind of a very basic buy a book and I'll ship it to you. It didn't account for, she'd have to think about things like how many times can someone download the ebook before it kind of cuts off the access so no one can share the link.
And
there's a lot of, really specific business use cases that you start getting into when you're dealing with commerce, because really commerce is business, right? And every business is different. And every business, like you said, grows and changes and wants to grow into new markets or into new products. Yeah, so like a very simple, what might start with, you know, looking at some SaaS offering, like, or even like something like Etsy, if you've got someone that's selling some kind of trinket, or I don't know what they sell on Etsy exactly, but if they're selling some, if they're selling some kind of, yeah, DIY crafty kind of thing, and they, you know, they're doing it out of their bedroom, they don't need want to worry about, they want to be where all the customers are, they don't want to have to worry about custom workflows for checkout. They want to use something that's that they know works for their friends. But then down the line, like you said, as their business grows, they might realize that they need their own website and they need to have some other optional type products. So,
do you think that's one of the biggest challenges you've encountered when trying to build an e-commerce solution, working with the client to get them to identify those sort of short, long-term needs, the scope of it?
Yeah, definitely. I think I would say the biggest challenge building commerce websites would be the content management side and the mix between like the fact that they're selling stuff, but they're also wanting to manage their content. So if they were on something like an Etsy, there's no real content to manage except for their products. But as soon as they have a website, they start to have, you know, maybe they'll have guide pages or documentation or other types of content that like a basic kind of Etsy or a SaaS offering like Shopify, they have concepts like pages and things like that, but like a full-fledged content management system is probably what they're looking for. And that's usually a challenge when they've got two separate systems and they're wanting to kind of like integrate them together.
So is that why you decided to tinker around and create the commerce add-on?
Yeah, exactly. I used Expresso Store for Expression Engine, and that was getting closer to what we wanted. But when, and this is how I actually got introduced to Craft Commerce, you know, as a user of Expression Engine and Store, I got to know Adrian McNeil, who's the developer of Expresso Store, the original developer. And he said, hey, did you know that Pixel and Tonic were, you know, starting to build a content management system? So I had a look at it, and just the way they were building it from a content management perspective actually got me excited about what you could do with commerce. And so Adrian was thinking about building a commerce kind of plugin for what was called Blocks back then. This was a couple of years ago. Craft was originally called Blocks while it was in a private beta. And so, yeah, I wanted to see what we could do with commerce, because on Expression Engine and other types of content management systems, you know, you're putting your products into your content, into like your entries. But Craft has a really great innovation around content management and relationships, and that's something called Elements, which we can talk about a little bit later. But yeah, content management and the integration between your products and that content is what really attracted me to building commerce on Craft.
Well, yeah, before we get into those details, I want to learn a little bit more about how you got to join Pixel and Tonic. So you initially created your own independent plugin called Market Commerce, right?
Well, yeah, even earlier. I mean, it was probably a year ago I started to build it, and yeah, it was called Seller, and then it was called Market. So it's been through quite a bit of history, but yeah, it was called Market Commerce, and it's a plugin for Craft, and I was building it on my own.
Did you have a project to do it, use it for, or were you just totally like, I just want to build this?
Yeah, I did the crazy thing. I actually left my job.
Wow.
I went all in on it. So I thought I wanted to build something. I knew I could build something. I just didn't have the time, right? It's hard to build something as big as commerce when you're kind of doing a lot of client projects and stuff. So yeah, I decided to talk to my wife and said, hey, do you mind if I take off 2 or 3 months and just go hard at trying to make this product? And she agreed amazingly. And so, yeah, it was probably like December last year. I took time off and just started coding on it for, you know, 3 months straight, and got to put out a video on what I'd built so far. And yeah, it all started from there.
And then Pixel and Tonic, what made you, you know, join them? I mean, obviously you were interested in building this for Craft, but you know, you took time off to do this, was it with the intention to get in someplace and work, or was this a unique situation where you were like, yeah, I could see myself joining a company to do this exclusively and it just happened to be a great fit?
Yeah. So originally I thought I could get the plugin built and then I could, you know, release it and I could go back to doing some client work and then I'd just be maintaining it. But then out of the blue, Brandon from Pixel and Tonic contacted me and they said they'd seen the plugin and they liked it and they were impressed by it. And so they made me the offer to see if they'd been thinking about doing commerce for quite a while. And it was one thing that a lot of people are really attracted to Craft. It's a really great content management system, but commerce component was missing from it for a long time. And I think they realized that and they just, they wanted to make sure that commerce was, you know, to their quality and was well supported. And so they could have either, you know, built it themselves when they've got lots of other things that are on their plate, but they decided to, yeah, acquire the plugin and wanted to know if I'd be willing to join them. And I said yes. So I was very excited. It's a great little company and I'd always admired the quality of the software and their developers. And so I've been learning a lot in the last few months after I've joined them.
Very cool. So I do believe that Pixel and Tonic is also known for their really great user experience and their UI of their software. And before we dive into like the development side of e-commerce, I'm curious about your approach to the user experience and UI of an e-commerce platform. What were your priorities to make sure that your plugin made sense?
This is the thing. I was under the pump for, you know, knowing that I only had a bit of runway for, you know, funding this and building it myself. I was, you know, pressed for time. Obviously, there's lots of different, there's a lot to build out, tax systems and shipping systems. And so I did a lot of research in the year before and looking at other content, other commerce systems. And so all I could do is just take, especially the UI, because I'm not as sharp as UI as Pixel and Tonic are. And so I had to just, you know, look at conventions and things like that and just kind of clone, you know, the way a lot of other systems do it. But actually that is one of the major things that has been occurring over the last few months as I've been working with Pixel and Tonic on this is they don't just look at convention and how everybody else is doing it. They take it from, you know, first principles. What is the most important thing for the user? What's going to be the easiest thing for the user? And it's really, you know, helped improve the UI of the plugin. And, you know, that goes to things like things I wouldn't have thought about, like things like configuration. When you first install the plugin and you're a developer and you're setting it up for a client, you know, there's a bunch of configuration that you'd want to click through and do. And although you think you'd only have to do that once and it doesn't really matter if it's a few extra clicks, you know, Pixel and Tonic and, you know, Benjamin David, who's the one guy based in France doing a lot of the UI work, he's thinking about that. You know, it was something I wouldn't have thought about. I would have thought, you know, configuration, it's just a couple of screens you kind of see very rarely. But they, you know, are focusing on making sure that the whole experience is just really good. And especially the experience for the client. So not the developer building the website, not just the developer, but also the person who's going to use the software day to day, the client, and how easy it is for them to use. They think about all of those things much deeper than I did in those first 3 months of developing the plugin. So it's been a great experience.
It's been a good experience, but has it been an awkward adjustment in terms of, it, you know, for me, anytime I adjust my workflow, it feels a little uncomfortable. Has it been that way for you?
I would say yes. I would say.
Because it's your baby, right?
Well, yeah, it's, and that, I think the best work though is done when you have a bit of humility, right?
So,
I'm not saying I'm perfectly humble or anything like that, but if you're willing to accept your criticism and that kind of thing, it's just going to make the product better and it's going to help the client. And so the more of that, the better, I say, for the client. And it doesn't really matter, you know, if my feelings are a little bit hurt, which they're not really. They're not that tough on me, but they have a certain standard. You know, like I knew before joining them that Pixel and Tonic had a good reputation for user experience and quality, and you know, and they don't ship something until it is ready, until it is looking and working well. So, Yeah, it hasn't been difficult. I wouldn't say it's been difficult, but it's been a challenge. And I think, you know, the best products are made when there's a bit of a challenge. So,
was there a style guide that you had to follow when you started developing the add-on, either programmatically or even just like UI? Like the buttons need to look like this, or it needs to be this way, or...
There isn't an official Kraft plugin, you know, style guide. There's obviously, like, you can inspect the way that the control panel is built very easily because it's built in Twig, which is the same templating language that you use on the front end. And so I was able to, you know, see how those components are built, and it's very modular. It's built, you know, architected UI-wise very well. So I would obviously just copy the way that the Kraft core would do it. But there's a lot of things that I missed and didn't pick up on, and that's what, you know, the keen eyes of Brandon and Ben, you know, have, is that they can look through a screen and pick up on, because I, you know, I'm not as a sharp UI developer as them. They can pick up on whether something's a pixel out, and I would have said I had no, I wouldn't have even noticed it. So
I think it highlights how valuable collaboration can be to the design and development process. You know, we talked about that last episode. Leigh and I think both of us experience it all the time, that when we're able to collaborate and, you know, including giving each other critical feedback, it's always not only a better product, but I feel like each of us grow a little bit. And that kind of makes you feel like you're a better developer, a better designer.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I saw joining Pixel and Tonic as one of the greatest learning opportunities for me, like, but not just UI-wise, but coding and architecturally, I'm learning a lot. So I think if you're not scared to open your mouth, and if you're all adults, then everyone can benefit, you know. If you're going to take something the wrong way when someone gives a bit of criticism, then it's really, it's just not a good path to go down. So, so yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to get feedback. Like when you're developing something by yourself, you're in a bit of a bubble, right? Like there's, apart from a couple of people testing the software, and they're not always like that worried about the UI, you're in a bubble, and so decisions that you make are, it's a bit of an echo chamber, and you kind of just decide to do something and no one says no, and it gets done that way and left that way. But with three or four people looking at it on a weekly basis, you get to shorten that feedback loop, and improvements get made a lot quicker.
So let's dive into commerce itself. Let's start talking about what, like, the core features of it are. I'm curious, is it suitable for all types of e-commerce, like something as just simple as processing payments, to something more complicated, like managing inventory, having membership subscriptions? Is it, does it run the gamut, or is it focusing on one?
The way I see it at the moment, and obviously, like, things will change over time, but at the moment it's focused on a fairly flexible commerce platform. So it's extensible, and not that you need to extend it to use it, but it can handle, you know, basic simple payments, and it can handle a stock inventory system, and it has, you know, a tax system and a shipping system, and it has a discount and sales system. So it is full featured in that respect, and it's, you know, it would be designed to be managing a lot of products and making a lot of sales or orders. But of course it could be used for just a very simple, you know, if you're just selling one ebook. And so the next question after that is obviously like pricing, and like, is there a lighter version, because you don't need the full large product. And so we haven't announced anything like that, but it will be suitable for a very wide range of commerce applications, except for version one. Subscriptions will not be released in version one. So that's one of those use cases that's kind of always kind of left until version two, I think. But
so it will be in maybe a future version, though.
For subscriptions? Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's definitely a possibility, yeah. We're just focused on getting the UI right for all the core stuff at the moment, and getting a version one out. You know, right now it's in a private beta, so it's being used and by people right now building things on it. Once that all stabilizes, we can get this version one out before the end of the year. Then we can focus on those kind of those extra nice features like subscriptions.
Will you guys be also releasing almost like a demo site, just like you do with the generic Kraft site demo?
The goal is to, yeah. And I don't have a timeline that, sorry, I can't let you know when the demo, but there will be a free trial that will be available as well. So people can you download it, install it, and use it when we release the version one, which we haven't got a date. It's going to be before the end of the year. or actually we do have a date, but we haven't announced anything yet, and before the end of the year. And they'll be able to download a trial, and it will work as a fully functional product, but it just won't do any live transactions with a real gateway. Right. It'll just doing like dummy test transactions. So,
and you mentioned earlier something about Elements. So is that's one of the things that's unique about Craft Commerce. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yeah. So in a lot of content management systems, there's, you know, a concept of like an entry or a post.
Right. Like Espresso Store, I set up a channel for products and then each product's an entry. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Or even in like a WordPress, like a content management system would have like a post, a stream of posts. And those posts can have like custom fields placed on them, or like an entry in Expression Engine can have custom fields. But in Craft, there's like a deeper extraction, and it's not obvious to a user or even like a front-end developer that's building a website in Craft, but architecturally there's something called elements. So in Craft, a entry is an element, so like an entry that you'd have like in a section. A user is an element, a category is an element, a tag, and I think I'm missing one, but there's a lot of the main components in the system are called elements. And what that enables is attaching custom fields to all of those things. So users can have custom fields, or a category can have custom fields. And what that means is for products, they can be an element and they can have custom fields. But not only that, inside our product system, we also have a concept called variants, which are like variations of a product. And those variants also have custom fields because they're an element. So the benefit of that and why it's really great is that you get all of the great like relationship building between entries and products. And products really have most of the features of an entry. So they have URLs, and they can have categories, and they can have, you know, all the type of, you know, information that you'd usually put onto an entry, they can also have. But it's a bit more semantic, right? Like, so your client doesn't need to be looking at a list of like sections, and one of those is products and the one next to it is frequently asked questions. The products exist in a different part of the control panel, but they still have all the same power as an entry. So in the past, like that commerce engines have had to like put their products into entries just so that they could give their products the flexibility. But with Craft, the flexibility comes because a product is an element. So I hope that's easy to understand. It's really good from a developer's perspective, and it's also great for relationships. So when I say relationships, I mean like entry relationships, not other relationships. So I don't think my content management systems can help with that.
That was one of the things I loved about, you know, working in Craft is the fact that like you can attach a field to like anything.
Yeah.
Like literally anything.
And another one that we use in commerce is orders. So orders themselves are elements. And so like you can put custom fields on an order. So if you want to collect some additional information with an order from a customer, then that can get added onto the order's custom fields. And then it obviously opens up like all these possibilities with people writing their own custom fields and attaching them to orders and products. And so we have a guy, he's actually based in Perth, and he's building on Craft Commerce at the moment in the private beta. So he owns like a digital imaging company where they sell like high-end monitors. And so he has like these really like detailed like calibration guides and this content, right? So this is content that sits in entries. But because products are also elements, he's able to like really do a deep link between those documents and the products. And so inside like a matrix field on an entry, he could drop in a relationship to a product there. And, you know, so during the documentation, someone could like buy the product while they're reading the instructional documentation. So there's really great use cases with like the products and the entries really being related and integrated well together.
And that's always, at least in my experience with the clients I've had, something that they find really valuable is kind of cross promotional items. And so easily being able to associate, in this case, products, but ultimately elements, I guess, the products with any other product or some type of information related to that product. Or like we have a client who sells coffee, and not only do they have information about the product, that the coffee itself, but you know, the region in which it's grown, and that's its own bit of content. And so that stuff can to be cross promoted is valuable to them, or cross related on the same page kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, a lot of commerce engines or commerce platforms you look out in the marketplace at, they have to build their own like taxonomy system from scratch, mm-hmm. right? So they, right. you know, tagging your products and putting them into categories or departments yep. or sections. And that's the power of craft, right? You can have a category field on a product, and you might have three of them, and one of them puts them into the product into one type of department, the other one puts them into another, you know, because a t-shirt might work in one department and another department. Mm-hmm. And so it has that same powerful like categorization, you know, built in to that, that entries have, because, you know, products are elements. So mm-hmm. it's really fantastic. And, you know, being able to categorize entries the same way you categorize your products, even though they're in different areas of the control panel, it's really good.
So we actually got a question from a listener. This is from Jordan Lev, and he was curious if the Craft Commerce plugin is going to require a third-party and JavaScript-only service, like how Perch requires Molten. Or can developers plug in different payment gateways so they aren't reliant on a third-party system? And, you know, especially because they want to make the cart more accessible by not requiring JavaScript.
Yeah, definitely. So that's a great question. So commerce, for Craft Commerce, the plugin is fully independent of any like third-party API for managing your products and orders. So in the case of Molten, that's a third-party API that stores all of the data to do with your products and mm. orders. But everything is stored in Craft for Craft Commerce. The only thing which there's a bit of a mix there is Molten is an API for commerce, but it's not an abstraction over just the gateways. It adds all these other commerce functionality. But Craft Commerce still allows all sorts of different payment gateways. And so it supports all of the standard ones in OmniPay, which is a mm-hmm. open source payment library, as well as you can create your own payment gateway if you have a special client. You could create a gateway that just works for them, or you could, there's, you know, hundreds of gateways out there that work with OmniPay, and they will work with Craft Commerce. And so, yeah, all of your data stays within the same database that mm-hmm. your content is in. There's no third-party API calls to get those kind of products. There's no JavaScript that you need to embed on your page, except for any JavaScript you want to put there to improve usability. And everything is, you know, pretty much standalone, except for making that call to your payment gateway to charge the customer's credit card.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me, and I'm sure that's going to answer his question. I'm curious, are there any other aspects of the commerce plugin that you think are unique compared to some of the other solutions that you've had experience with?
I would say on the content management side, definitely unique, but it gets that those kind of, you know, superpowers from Craft itself. And, you know, being able to relate to any type of entry. I mean, you could relate a product to a user and, you know, you sell a user if you wanted to, you know. So, but that's the power of like the Craft elements, is that, you know, everything is an element and everything could therefore be a product. But that's the really the one of the major benefits is the fact it's built on Craft Commerce, Of course, commerce is a fundamental, you know, being able to pay someone is not, it's not revolutionary, it's nothing new, but there is going to be some great, you know, usability features that your clients will really like. And I think mm-hmm. that the benefit of Pixel and Tonic, you know, helping with, you know, advance the UI and the usability is really going to be a benefit over other commerce products.
Can you share a little bit of what that means? Like, what is, if usability and user experience is part of the killer feature, like what do they do that you're like, oh, this is so much better?
Okay, so I'll think of something that is probably going to come fairly soon into the private beta. Is obviously, like, you could create an entry and you might want to embed a product on that entry page.
Right.
And so usually you'd have to jump out, you'd have to go create your product, yeah. and then you'd have to jump back in and relate it. Yeah. And so we have a system where you'll be able to create your product in line.
Ooh.
And things. So those kinds of things that I and to be honest, that wouldn't have been possible in Kraft before I joined them, not because I built it, but because the commerce is, you know, in driving this kind of innovations across Kraft as well. And so that kind of functionality will actually roll out to other types of elements as well. So, you know, being able to create like a category from you without having to go outside and create the category first before jumping back in, those kinds of things.
I can see that adding up to save a lot of time.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's all about the author experience, right? Mm-hmm. Like the author or the client that's using it on a day-to-day basis, is it frustrating them or is it, you know, helping them? So
Yeah, and I will have to say that, I mean, some concept of that already exists in non-commerce things in Kraft. Like if you have an assets field, I mean, you can edit a bunch of stuff about the asset while you're in the entry, without having to leave the entry, go to the assets tab, change it there, then go back, reassociate. No, like you can just go to the assets field, choose the asset and edit it right there.
Yeah, and it's one thing I actually didn't even know about. You can actually drag a image straight onto like an add asset field.
Yes,
Without even opening up the... And yeah, it's those kinds of like things that the guys are thinking about and, you know, designing. It really just adds up. It doesn't seem like much when you're describing the feature, and it may not be that interesting even to listen to it, like us trying to describe it. But when you're working on the product on a day-to-day basis, it really adds up to like an enjoyable experience.
I'm curious if you have a thought on, I guess it comes down to what the needs for the project are, but why would a developer choose a CMS and, you know, a solution that's part of a CMS versus something that's a plugin or a service that's hosted that you integrate in? Why is that beneficial for either a developer to work with or the client to work with?
So you're asking whether it's beneficial to have a separate product for commerce versus like integrated into the CMS?
Yeah, I mean, we had a client recently who, you know, we presented a couple options and she ultimately chose a Shopify integration, which is fine. You know, we emphasize that, you know, having it all in your same system, like all in the CMS, all your products are there with all of your content, gives you a singular experience. And then there's less opportunity for duplication of content, like you're maintaining products in two places if you have Shopify versus on your site kind of thing. But, you know, ultimately, I think the Shopify appealed to her because I guess it seemed like more of a known, like it had more of a, I don't know.
Well, it's for e-commerce, right?
Like that's what it is. Yeah. It's like it's just e-commerce. So that must make it better somehow.
Yeah, look, and just to clarify, so Kraft Commerce will be a add-on to Kraft. So it's not going to be built in, you know, to the core product, but it's integrated by the fact that, you know, it's built by Pixel and Tonic and it's going to be, you know, deeply integrated. But
and it's all in the same database, right? There's not like a separate...
Yeah, that's right. It is still in the same, but it is a plugin. So you can use Kraft without any commerce, right? Mm-hmm. But you can then go and get the commerce plugin and install it into Kraft. And, but yeah, I think the same reason somebody would choose Kraft or Expression Engine over something like Squarespace.
Right.
I mean, because Squarespace, their, you know, thing is really simple, quick, you know, beautiful websites, and they do that really well. But it's when the client will want to take that next step and customize something beyond what that hosted solution wants to do. And so if Shopify like meets all the client's needs, and they just never foresee ever wanting to do something custom designed, or then Shopify could work for that client. Like, it's not to say that Kraft Commerce would suit every, you know, use case, meaning because every client's different and every requirements are different. But I think we'll be marketing Kraft Commerce and explaining to it on a separate website. Kraftcommerce.com is where it will end up being. And so we'll be, especially to clients, be educating them on the power of the commerce as a platform itself. But the benefit of being fully integrated with your content management system. Does that answer the question? Sorry.
It does. I think it's a difficult question sometimes when you're in the position of working with the client and you're making recommendations, but ultimately it's the client's decision on, you know, which direction to go. And I think that might have been the element of our conversation that was missing, which is if you ever want to do anything else, you're going to have to get off of Shopify. If you're ever going to want to do something else. And I think it's hard for a client to think about that really long-term kind of thing.
I would say, okay, while you're publishing a blog entry, and you're mentioning a product, how are you putting that product into that page, and having a buy now button and if they're having to copy like a snippet of JavaScript from somewhere else, they're going to have to put some kind of like special code into the page just to get that integration working. I think that, and then versus like clicking a button and seeing the list of products and being able to search inline, from a usability perspective, that's a pretty good selling point, but it's tough and you have to assess it on a client by client basis. And
I would say it's a control thing for a lot of clients. That's what I would say.
Yeah.
Right? Because when you choose a SaaS service, you let go of a lot of control over the design, over the development, over the gateway, all those kind of things. But if you've got an all integrated CMS situation, that's yours. You can do whatever you want. You could change gateways in the middle if you wanted to, those kind of things. It's all up to you. You can start small and then grow big, and you already have it, all at the beginning without having to move place to place. The other thing too is volume of sales, right? Because at some point, if you use a SaaS service, it's not profitable for you anymore, because they do, their main thing is they take a percentage of your sales. If you just have a direct account to your bank's gateway, that's usually you've negotiated a much smaller percentage, especially due to volume.
Exactly. That's where I was meaning when I said, this is why you choose Craft or Expression Engine over something like Squarespace, right? Because it's usually those bigger kind of, you've grown a bit. You want something, you want to take full control and you want it to really represent your business, and you've got the budget to do it, to have it managed all in the one place, and you're not relying on five different third party services. But if you're at a mom and pop or selling something like some trinkets, the best thing you could do is probably jump onto a SaaS product and just start your business, right? And it's better to be making some money and then assess your situation and then decide to upgrade and grow into a more full-featured CMS and commerce platform. So,
yeah, I feel like that can be, that discussion with a client or a prospect can be one of the more challenging parts of an e-commerce project, is because, the thing you just mentioned in terms of features is I wish I had said that when we were trying to get them to not pick Shopify. I don't think I was as, I guess you almost have, not a pitch, but you have to have all the things that are benefits. And that means that you need to know it about all the different things out there. And that's impossible. It's impossible to know all the features of Espresso Store and Cart Throbs back out. And then Craft Commerce is coming out, and then there's Shopify, and then there's all these other ones. And to know the right one to recommend, as a developer, we can work with all of them, but to know the one that's going to be best for the client, I find that really, really challenging.
Yeah, it definitely is. And sometimes, as developers, we're prone to say, let's just go with the most flexible systems to start with, because then we don't have to migrate anything later on. But you're right, from a client's perspective, they just want it to work as soon as possible for a good budget. And you got to get that balance right. And I don't think there is a silver bullet. I think it's important at the beginning of every project. And sometimes it does take, like you said, a big list of questions, a big survey, to just figure out where the client's thinking short-term and long-term, and growth-wise and feature-wise. Because as soon as you say, would you like coupons? Their immediate answer is yes, for every feature, right?
Yes.
Even if version one of your project doesn't have that, they want to be able to do that in the future. So you have to, work with every client individually and work through those problems with them. It's tough to assess their needs and make sure it works for them long-term.
There must be a few things that people often miss when they implement an e-commerce project. What do you think they are?
Things that they miss.
There's all these complications and stuff. What do you think might be a common thing that you're that people should consider this next time they develop an e-commerce project?
Well, one of them is the gateways and the percentage. You know, that I think I mentioned that before, because like you said, as soon as they start growing and they realize, wow, 5% of every sale is going to our payment gateway, this isn't right. So making sure that you stay on top of their options for gateways, and don't just go with Stripe because it's the nicest one to use or the easiest one for you as a developer. And so
that's important, by the way, what you just said. Don't just choose something because it's easy for you, like as the developer. Like, what is the best for your client and their business? Because the more money they make, the more likely they'll hire you again to do more stuff.
Yeah, that's it. For challenges, I think a big challenge is making sure that the user experience for their customers is as good as possible. And sometimes, you know, you might choose a commerce platform and it says, okay, your customers have to go through these 5 steps to check out. And you go, okay, well, I'm going to have to put 5 different page designs to get them through those steps. But, you know, for an ebook, you don't need like 5 steps. You don't need a billing address and a shipping address. And so you have to think about, it's easy to say every order workflow is the same, or there's certain type of product orders that need a shorter, you know, checkout flow, or it needs to be just like a one button with an email. And so that can sometimes be a trap that developers fall into, is just keeping the same checkout workflow for every kind of product. But as for challenges, there's just unlimited challenges. there's always a challenge, but you can work through them. So,
you know, there's one thing that I did in some of my earlier e-commerce projects, and it's not common. I don't do it anymore because I learned my lesson the hard way. But my first 2 e-commerce projects, I didn't get the whole find out before you start building it what their shipping needs are, their tax needs are, et cetera, et cetera. And then I'm pretty much done with what I need to do, and now it's time for me to plug in all the values for taxes and shipping. And I go to the client thinking they know, because I'm assuming they know what those things are, and they don't. They hadn't thought about it. And so all of that stuff, because I left it to the end rather than addressing all of those sort of your base information that you need for commerce, it like doubled the time for the project. And the client was pretty upset because I didn't think to ask them in the beginning. I asked them at the end and they weren't prepared, and it just sort of delayed actually going live. It was totally my mistake, but I did it 2 times before I realized that it was me that was messing up.
Yeah, like even thinking about, I mean, you can get the checkout system working and you can purchase an order and the order looks good, like when it gets into your back end. But then there's like steps after that that the client needs to do, like actually ship the order.
Right,
and,
right.
And what do they have to do? And so you give them training. Well, you come to this page and you can see all your orders. And then, okay, what do I do from here? Well, okay, go into every single one individually and print them out so you can put them into the packing slips, you know, into the products that you're shipping. Like those kind of things that you have to think about. Training them on those kinds of things is really important. And that goes to tax as well. And you're right, like tax and shipping is really complicated, especially with all the different types of tax around the world. And are they selling around the world or are they just selling locally? Does their commerce system stop you? You know, if they just want to sell locally, you know, within their own country to avoid, I don't know why they would, but you know, if they want to avoid having to, like the new VAT tax systems and things like that.
The UK.
Yeah, there's a lot to think about there. And so it's good advice, as you said, to try and think of all those things up front. But there's a long list of things to think about, and I don't think I could list them all off the top of my head.
I don't know what the plans are for craft documentation, but if you guys are open to it, I'd love it if you guys would like make a big list, all the things that you need to ask your client before you start a project.
Yes.
You know, find out.
It's a good idea.
What is your shipping? Will it be this? Will it be that? Will you charge taxes on the shipping? Will, you know, those sorts of things. Because I kind of have a rudimentary one that I've cobbled together over the years, but I find myself adding a new question to it pretty much every time.
Yeah, is there a limit? On and on and on and on. There's so many.
Yeah.
There's so many. I do have a couple of craft commerce specific feature questions. So you mentioned that, you know, you guys are going to launch at least for version 1, like simple, like rudimentary products, those kind of things, right? And that subscriptions, maybe version 2. How about something like ticketing, like events and ticketing? Is that something that you guys are also interested in?
Yeah. So the way it's architected, and I won't get too kind of technical or PHP, but we have a system in Craft Commerce with something called, we call purchasables. And so developers will, and it's not going to be required for like most use cases, like if you're selling normal products or, you know, downloadable products. But if something like ticketing, which is very specialized, like there's a lot of edge cases with that as well, like collecting, you know, information per ticket holder, and like there's a lot of things to do with ticketing. Someone in theory, and it could be us down the line, but someone in theory could create a plugin and it could provide a purchasable called ticket, and it will work with our checkout and ordering system. So there, it is possible that like more types of unique you know, sellables or purchasables, as we call them, can be created and supplied by plugins. But then over time, of course, we might, you know, add them ourselves. So I know that the two big requests are subscriptions and tickets, and they will be on the agenda.
Cool. And the other question I have, and Jordan Lev also had it, you kind of hinted at this at the beginning of the show, but let's directly ask it.
Yeah.
Will it cost an additional fee over the Craft Pro license?
Yes, it will. So stay tuned for the announcements on that, which will explain it far better than I can right now. But it'll be an additional plugin cost, like a cost like you'd buy a plugin.
Yep.
And you'd purchase it, and then you'd be able to install it into your Craft Commerce. Into your Craft CMS. And then we haven't worked out whether it requires Craft Pro. It works with the free version at the moment, but all those kinds of things we'll have to, when we can announce those in due course, we'll do that as soon as possible.
So before we wrap up, I wanted to get your final thoughts about what would be your best advice to someone developing an e-commerce solution?
So developing like a from scratch or implementing one or...
Well, you know what? That's actually an interesting nuance. Either way, I think both are interesting questions because, as you mentioned, someone might be interested in developing, you know, a plugin for a purchasable and in a way that's related to e-commerce. So let's talk about it from that perspective first, someone developing, not implementing.
Well, to develop a full e-commerce kind of like system, it's bigger than I thought originally. So like developing like a whole system is something that you wouldn't really want to just jump into without thinking everything through. But I mean, advice to think about people getting into developing e-commerce is, I would say the biggest thing that helped me was just go and look at as many commerce products as you can out in the marketplace. And that includes not just like Magento or the installable e-commerce platforms, but the SaaS platforms as well. And just look at their features and functionality and, you know, go through a checkout with all of them. And one of the ones that I really enjoyed like learning about before I started developing full time was Spree, which is like a Ruby on Rails e-commerce platform. And so even though it wasn't PHP, I got to look at their documentation, how they described tax and how tax works, and I got to see how they handled different things. And I learned a whole heap by looking at, you know, just a wide variety of e-commerce systems. And so definitely recommend doing a lot of looking, because there's a lot of e-commerce products out there, just like there's a lot of content management systems. And once you're able to look at them all, then things start to become consistent and there's, you know, similarities between them all, and then you can figure out where you kind of fit there. So if I was developing a ticketing purchasable for Craft Commerce, I would definitely check out, you know, Eventbrite and look at how their UI works for creating tickets and how it even works for, you know, printing out like an attendance list, or there's all sorts of stuff that you could look at and not steal, but, you know, borrow from. Build on the shoulders of giants, yeah. Implementing, best advice, make sure you gather as much information before you start, as you guys have already pointed out. Implementing, figure out the gateways as soon as possible. Make sure that is all, you know, tidied up with your client. And then figure out whether you're going to be doing a SaaS or a installed, you know, content management system-based commerce. And you can always use the example templates, but don't just rely on those example templates to just stylize, but, you know, think about what's best for your client, the customers of the client, and, you know, what's the best checkout processes, and build something that works for the client and their business, and not just kind of copy the templates. So that's it. That's very general advice. There's nothing specific.
Well, it's good advice, though. It's good advice.
It's the stuff that when you're first doing e-commerce projects, you don't really realize. And if I could just throw out a little bit of advice as well, at least in the beginning for me, an e-commerce project takes a lot longer than you may think it will. Mm-hmm. And so definitely be smart with your project cost or estimate or whatever you're selling to the client. I've definitely have eaten it a couple times on e-commerce being like, oh, I could do that. And it'll only take this long. Yeah. It never is that simple. It just isn't.
Yeah, I agree. Especially if you're going to be doing your own kind of like CMS-based e-commerce configuration, because you're a little bit closer to the metal. You're a little bit closer to how things work underneath. I mean, a SaaS-based product, you may be able to get them up and running in a day, right? If they are happy with a pre-made template and you know, basic customization. But as soon as you start to get into like configuring tax for them, that's when you need to realize it's going to take longer than you think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, thank you for being on our show.
But
before we finish up, we've got our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit
better.
Should
I be nervous?
No, it's all good. Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. First question, Android or iOS?
iOS.
If you were stranded on a desert island and can only bring three things, what would you bring?
I wouldn't need to bring a phone. Three things. Okay. Book. DVDs, water. That's a tough one.
What's your favorite TV show?
Breaking Bad.
Nice.
It was, yeah.
What's your favorite dessert?
I would say my grandmother's chocolate mousse.
Mm. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Another profession, I would say... Oh, gee, I have never thought about that question. I'll say artist.
Oh, cool.
No idea what that means, but yeah.
What profession would you not like to try?
Anything with manual labor.
What's the latest article or blog post you read?
The latest blog post I read was by Paul Graham just this morning on Hacker News about capital punishment. There you go.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I won't go into details.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
See-through walls. Actually, that sounds creepy. fly.
What music do you like to work to?
I like to listen to like 90s like pop, nice. Pop punk, yeah.
All right, last question, cats or dogs?
Can I be really offensive and say neither? I'm not.
No, it's all good.
I heard your cat earlier meowing.
Although I think you're only the second person who said neither.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not an animal person. I don't know why.
You're in Australia, man. How can you not be?
Because we're meant to be scared of our animals, right?
That's true. Animals can kill you.
Kangaroos look cute, but they'll give you a nice punch. Yeah.
All right. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us, Luke.
Hey, no worries. Thank you very much.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
Yeah. So you can find me on Twitter at Luke Holder. And also I am constantly in the Craft Slack community. So you can go to buildwithcraft/community. And join the Slack there.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I'm really excited about Craft Commerce coming out.
Same.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsor. Thank you, Craft CMS.
We'd also like to thank our partners, Arcus Tech, DevOT, and EE Insider.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at ControlClickCast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you like this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we'll talk about Statamic for large-scale websites with Daniel Fowler. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.